Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, Perfection of Renunciation, text number 60. So Bhava Jaina Kunteya Nirvada Swena Karmana Kartum Nichasi An Mohat Karishasya Vishopitat. Svabhava Jaina, born of your own nature. Kunteya, O son of Kunti, Nirvada, conditioned. Svena, by your own. Karmana, activities. Kartum, to do. Na, not. Ichasi, you like. Yat, that which. Mohat, by illusion. Karishasi, you will do. Avasha, involuntarily. Api, even. Tat, that. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Under illusion, you are now declined to act according to my direction. But compelled by the work born of your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. Purport. If one refuses to act under the direction of the Supreme Lord, then he is compelled to act by the modes in which he is situated. Everyone is acting under the spell of a particular combination of the modes of nature is acting that way. But anyone who voluntarily engages himself under the direction of the Supreme Lord becomes glorious. Text 61. Ishvara sarabhutanam ridesh arjana tishtati brahmayan sarabhutani yantra rudani maya. Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. Purport. Arjuna is not the supreme knower, and his decision to fight or not to fight was confined to his limited discretion. Lord Krishna instructed that the individual is not all in all. Supreme Personality of Godhead, or himself, Krishna, as the localized supersoul, sits in the heart directing the living being. After changing bodies, the living entity forgets his past deeds, but the supersoul is the knower of the past, present, and future, remains the witness of all his activities. Therefore, all the activities of the living entities are directed by the supersoul. The living entity gets what he deserves, and he is carried by the material body, which is created in the material energy under the direction of the supersoul. As soon as the living entity is in place in a particular type of body, he has to work under the spell of that bodily situation. Person situated... whatever. Person seated in a high-class motor car goes faster than one seated in a slower car. Although the living entities, the drivers may be the same. Similarly, by the order of the Supreme Soul, material nature fashions a particular type of body to a particular type of living entity, so that he may work according to his past desires. The living entity is not independent. One should not think himself independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The individual is always under the Lord's control. Therefore, one's duty is to surrender. That is the injunction of the next verse. Svabhava jena kundiya nivara svena karmana kartam nichasi an mohat karishasya vishopitat ishvara sarabhutanam ridesh arjana tishtati brahmayan sarabhutani yantrudani maya. So in this verse, it explains how intimately we are connected with Krishna eternally. We may imagine ourselves to be independent of Krishna or even of the material nature, but all of us were completely under one of the two controls. Since we're very tiny, we have to be controlled by something. Therefore, with intelligence, we have to find out who's the best master. In other words, as living entities, we need a master. We need something to direct us. We need some purpose. Without some purpose, there's nothing to do. Of course, in Brahman, if we were in Brahman, we would have nothing to do except to sit there for a long time, doing nothing. But after a while, one gets bored, because we want to do something. We want to do something to make ourselves happy, to become happy. Now, in the material world, one imagines that by a certain material circumstances, we'll become happy. Just like, if you are hungry, we imagine that if I get something to eat, I'll be happy. But actually what happens, yes, there's some happiness in eating, but the main happiness is the fact that we're not hungry anymore. It's not exactly positive getting free from hunger in the sense that next day we're going to be hungry again. So this happiness of becoming free from hunger is the same kind of happiness if you take your finger, you take a hammer and you smash your finger with the hammer. Now, it's very painful to do that. And if someone comes along and says, if you stop hammering your finger, you'll actually feel a lot better. So you stop hammering your finger and you say, well, yeah, it really works. I feel a lot better. Thanks for the cure. Now I feel really good. But actually, you're just not feeling so as bad as you were feeling when you were hammering your finger, that's all. You stop doing something which is causing you pain. So that's called happiness in the material world. So when we're not in pain, we call that happiness. We're not suffering hunger, we feel satisfied. When some part of our body is not hurting us, we think, now I feel better. Actually, we feel less pain, that's all. So the less pain we feel in the material world, the more we consider ourselves to be happy. And the more pain we feel, the more we feel ourselves to be unhappy. But actually, this pain, or the lack of it, is simply our consciousness focused on the material body and the material mind. In other words, we focus on the body principally through the mind. And due to our intelligence being covered by our false ego, we think it's ourselves, and therefore we think I'm happy or I'm distressed. But actually, we're not happy or distressed. It's the body that's happy or distressed. And we're identifying with it. We're conscious of it. And therefore, we think we're happy or distressed. Of course, we are. It's our experience that makes us feel like we're happy or distressed. But it's not really us. It's the body that's in a certain circumstance. So Krishna says, if you just add him to the equation, in other words, Krishna is all blissful, his devotees are all blissful. Their name, form, quality, and pastimes, and loving exchanges are all blissful. So if we concentrate our minds upon them, then we also become blissful. Just like the spark, when it's in the fire, then it glows. It doesn't have to learn how to glow in the fire. It's not that you take a little spark and say, when you get into the fire, then you do this and you do that. You touch your little fiery toe to your fiery head, and then you can glow. No, as soon as it's in the fire, it glows. So as soon as we're conscious of Krishna and his name, form, quality, pastimes, and associates, then we start glowing again. Then we become naturally in our natural, blissful existence. And as soon as the spark leaves the fire, then its natural glowing starts to diminish again. Diminish. If it lands on water, then it gets extinguished. If it still lands on sand, it may smolder for some time. In any case, the spark is supposed to be in the fire, outside the fire, it doesn't have a very happy time. So similarly, we have the capacity to, first of all, either follow Krishna's instructions or don't follow Krishna's instructions. Now, if we don't follow Krishna's instructions, then it says that Maya is standing right next to us. And immediately she slaps us down. Krishna, Bahira, Mukha, Bhogavan Chitare, Nikatista Tare, Japatiyadare. Then Maya is next to us, and she's aware of what our decisions are. So as soon as we make the decision that we want to enjoy material nature and make arrangements for that, then she puts us into material consciousness so that we can do it. Without Maya putting us into material consciousness, then it's not possible to either think ourselves to be the controllers or think ourselves to be enjoying. So Maya assists us by putting us into material illusion so we can imagine ourselves to be controllers and enjoyers. Otherwise, if we were an illusion, then we'd see that we're very tiny little souls in a big, big body. And the body is like a machine, and the machine is meant to fulfill our desires in the material world, to imagine ourselves to be controllers and enjoyers, but actually we're just sufferers. We're slaves to the material energy, and under its direction we're being suffering. Anyone who has a material body probably can agree, the body is not always so blissful. Just like if you have a toothache, you're suffering. And if you go to the dentist and they cure your toothache, you don't run down the street saying, I'm so blissful, I don't have a toothache. Or people without toothaches, they don't run down the street saying, I'm in bliss, because I have teeth. No, it's only when we're in pain that we realize how painful this body could be. But otherwise, the body doesn't cause us very much happiness by itself. It's only when we're in pain and suffering that we realize how painful the body is. And when it's cured, we call that happiness. But it's not real happiness. Because if we were in suffering, we would know it was so-called happiness of being cured. Therefore, the solution to our real problem, because our real problem is that we want to be happy permanently, is to somehow or another focus one's attention and give one's love to Krishna. But in order to do that, that means we have to serve Krishna. In other words, Krishna does not reveal himself unless we become his servants, unless we become his devotees. If we don't like Krishna, we don't like the fact that he's God, we don't want to associate with him, then why will he reveal himself to us? Even Kamsa or Hiranyakashipu, they didn't really know who they were fighting against, because Krishna didn't really reveal himself to them within their hearts that who he was. They didn't really know who they were struggling against. Similarly, we're always with Krishna. The whole universe is a manifestation of Krishna. Krishna is in our heart. But unless we want to become Krishna conscious, then of course Krishna is not going to reveal these things to us. He'll allow us to remain an illusion, thinking ourselves to be independent enjoyers and controllers of the material energy. And if we follow the process that Krishna has given us, and we follow his instructions, and gradually he reveals himself. But it's not just mechanical. It's relational. In other words, Krishna in the spiritual world, everyone is a servant of Krishna and therefore a servant of each other. So in order to Krishna to reveal himself, because he's not different from anyone or anything, or we should say, everyone and everything is not different from Krishna. We can't like Krishna and not like his energy, because his energy is the same thing for Krishna. So if we don't like the living entities in this material existence, we don't like any living entity, or any particular living entity. We don't like the material energy, etc., etc., then we're blocked from experiencing Krishna. because we think that there's something apart from Krishna. And therefore, that whatever we think is apart from Krishna, that means we're an illusion, because there's nothing apart from Krishna. Therefore, to imagine something is apart from Krishna, one has to be an illusion. Just so happens that because we're used to being an illusion, we think to experience something about Krishna, that's extraordinary. Then we think we're greatly advanced, but actually, we're greatly fallen. And therefore, in our original position, that is Krishna consciousness. That's our normal position. And now we're in a fallen condition. And we make a little advancement towards Krishna consciousness. We think we're greatly elevated. But actually, we're still fallen. We're still attached to serving, to being an illusion. And therefore, we get a little bit out of illusion. We get a little bit into experiencing Krishna. But there's a lot more to go. A lot more to look forward to. Because whatever happiness we can derive from Krishna consciousness is just an insignificant amount compared to the ocean of happiness in Krishna service. But we get that little drop by trying to do something, at least following Krishna's instructions and developing proper relationships between Krishna's devotees. Because that's the most valuable intelligence Krishna can give us, is how to develop loving relationships with him and his devotees, and ultimately with all living entities. That's the most valuable intelligence we can get. Everything else is really not very important. It may have some value to helping us in some way to become Krishna conscious, but the most valuable thing is how to develop loving relationships. Therefore, the greatest benediction is to have the association of devotees. And even better than that is to learn how to relate to them in the loving exchanges. That will lead to the perfection of an eternal blissful life. Otherwise, there's no other way to get there. There's no place in the spiritual world where we fight with the devotees. That would be very unpleasant, go back to the spiritual world and have eternal enemies. No, in the spiritual world, there's only material. There's only spiritual friends, eternal spiritual friends, loving friends. And even there seems to be some antagonism between Srimati Radharani's party and Chandravali's party, but actually, it's all centered around Krishna, so it's all blissful. They're all trying to please Krishna. They're actually not antagonistic. They all appreciate the fact that they're pleasing Krishna, because that's the only thing they're interested in. But some kind of supposedly antagonism has to be there for the sake of Krishna's pastimes, that's all. But when the gopis think about the other party, they don't become morose. They're also ecstatic and can appreciate that they're serving Krishna, and therefore we have to serve better than they are. That's the competition. Who can make Krishna happier? So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments? So the purport is, if we hear what Krishna's instructions are, we understand what they are, we follow them nicely, we develop loving relationships with Krishna and his devotees, and help the innocent, then the result is that Krishna will appear within our memory. That is, we'll become Krishna conscious. Otherwise, there's no other way of doing it. We can't take a book on how to memorize Krishna and memorize Krishna and fight with the devotees while we're doing it. Now I've become a great devotee of Krishna. I can blaspheme all the devotees I want. I can do whatever I want. No, there are activities which lead to devotional service, and there's activities that take away from devotional service. And if we're in devotional service, then Krishna reciprocates with us in a loving exchange. And if we're not, then the material nature reciprocates with us. Just encourage us to stop being in the material nature. I'm reminding you of in the Howard Railroad Station, one person was there, a devotee was out waiting for a train, and he saw there was a person on the railroad track, a beggar, and the train came along and cut off half his body. So the devotee went over to him and said, "Could I do anything to help you?" He said, "Do you have a cigarette?" His body just got cut off half of it, and he wanted a cigarette. It's called illusion. Any questions or comments? Thank you very much. Grandaraj Shrimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.